So hello and welcome to everyone. I am Kiro and this is my friend Hotel. We are doing a podcast on issues that typically concern India. We are Indians, but we will have a global perspective on these things. So hello Hotel, glad you're finally able to start with us.
Hello Kiro, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm fine as well. Good to be here with you.
Yeah, very loaded question given the whole COVID background. But yeah,
yes,
surviving.
Funny. First, just for background, can we talk a little about the history of Indo-China relations before 1947 and after 1947?
So here's the thing. Until the late 1940s, India regarded China in the sense of what you might call a fellow colonized country. We were both victims of British imperialism, European imperialism, to a large extent. And that's how Indian visitors to China definitely saw the country, be it Rabindranath Tagore or Jawaharlal Nehru. Everything changed with China's reconquest of Tibet in 1949, when a very large number of Tibetans fled to India. And for the first time, we realized China is not this country to be sympathized with. It is now a neighbor, and a very large neighbor, a very powerful one. So I think many of the country's ruling classes for the first time had to start seeing China in a very different way. They weren't really prepared for the fact that China also had territorial claims on areas that the British had regarded as parts of India. So what happened here was, with regard to Ladakh, for example, British India claimed it, saying that Ladakh has at one point belonged to India. The basis of this claim was primarily that these Sikhs under Zorawar Singh had invaded this area and they had fought Qing China in the 19th century. The Qing dynasty tried to capture a large part of Ladakh in the name of recapturing it for Tibet. The Sikhs and the Qing fought fiercely and the Sikhs won. This is one of the very few recorded Indian invasions of territory that can now be called Chinese. So this resulted in the Treaty of Chushul, under which certain areas were agreed, this part is a no-go area, this part is Indian, this part is Chinese. So what happened subsequently was the British said, this area belongs to us because it is part of India. And the Chinese said, this area belongs to us because it is part of Tibet. So what you had really were arguably two imperial powers claiming that something belonged to them because it belonged to the area they had just conquered. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think that's a really clear explanation. I have a quick question about the specific role of Ladakh as an independent entity from Tibet. So, you know, as you're aware, Ladakh had their own smaller government, which was set up in Leh. And it functionally was separated from the Tibetan government, which was centered in Lhasa. It's like a lot of deals and treaties between the Sikhs and the Qing dynasty were in this role of the Sikhs acting as Ladakh's representatives. So do we know much about that? Like, what was the relation between Ladakh, Tibet, and I guess the rest of Kashmir?
So the way it worked was Ladakh was always regarded as distinct from Kashmir. The very fact that they have been bound into one single state in India, or that they were bound in last August, that in itself has often been considered an anomaly, because Kashmir, Gilgit-Baltistan, Jammu, Ladakh, these are significantly different cultures. Now, Ladakh, as we know, is a vast stretch of mostly desert land. It's a high-altitude desert. And the culture here is very different from that of its neighbors. They speak a particular dialect, the Ladakhi dialect. They have their own Buddhist culture over there. It is best understood as an entrepot. When I say an entrepot, I mean that trade occurring from India to Central Asia, one of the many silk routes, Ladakh was convenient because this is flat land. And the extension of Ladakh, that is called Aksai Chin, which was occupied by China around 60 years ago, one of the many reasons China took that territory was explicitly because it was convenient to navigate. The same reason that trade caravans and trade convoys have passed through that area for hundreds of years. It gave them a back door to Tibet. And the many revolts that have occurred in Tibet over the years, over the decades.
Sorry, just to be clear, Aksai Chin basically links Xinjiang province with Tibet.
That's right, that's right. It does. It links Aksai, Xinjiang with Tibet, and Xinjiang, of course, has been in the news recently. It's
right,
the homeland of the Uyghur people. Right, right, right. So that's the reason they wanted Aksai Chin. So Aksai Chin is technically a part of Ladakh, although currently, of course, they lie in different countries, what we call Ladakh. So here's the thing. Ladakh is conveniently located strategically as well, from a modern military perspective. At one time, it abutted the Soviet Union. It abutted China. It was in a convenient place to spy on India as well, if someone had occupied that. And you had Pakistan to the west. You can see why many countries, many foreign powers would be interested in a place like that. So China's interests in Ladakh are strategic. India's interests in Ladakh also. So you can see why the British wanted the territory. They had already built the Wakhan corridor in Afghanistan as a kind of buffer with Russia, with Imperial Russia. So Ladakh served again as a nice buffer against any future Russian incursions into India. So the British were always very nervous about the idea of a Russian invasion of India. That's partly why they invaded Afghanistan so often. But after the British left, things became very murky in that area because these successor states in South Asia and the new Chinese communist state, they all had very different ideas about what to do with those treaties.
Let's maybe have a quick summary of those, of each state's perception of those treaties. In particular, something I'm interested in is, does China claim the entirety of Ladakh due to Tibetan cultural affinity? Or are they only interested in specific frontier regions of Ladakh, some of the Pangong Lake fingers and some of the river valleys?
Right,
and so
right,
on.
Right.
So, for example, would they like to control lakes? Is that a goal that the Chinese state has?
So the Chinese tactic generally when claiming border territory has been that this area at one point paid tribute to some part of Tibet. So basically that these areas were governed by feudatories of Tibet. So Aksai Chin, for example, there's no question that at one point it was under Tibet's suzerainty. And if you have captured Tibet, does it logically follow that all areas that were at one point under Tibet also now come under Chinese control? I think that logic is tenuous, frankly, because those areas may have been quite content to be part of Tibet, but they want to be part of a very different culture. Certainly, Han culture and Tibetan culture are not one of the same thing. So they want to be a part of a very different regime. And this is the same tactic China has employed all across Asia. I need not elaborate on this. It's well known that they have.
But just going back to kind of mainland Ladakh, right? Like the heartland of Ladakh, which is sort of Leh and upwards north until sort of the Shok River, downwards south until the Himachal border, and then to the west, right until Kashmir. So this is your heartland Ladakh region. As we all know, the Sikh Empire did conquest this region in its entirety before signing a treaty with the Qing dynasty. So does China still claim this Ladakhi heartland is my question.
So that's a good question. That's a good question. And frankly, at the moment, it's hard to tell what exactly their intentions are, because the area they are currently contesting, the Galwan Valley, where they have gone and pitched their tent, so to speak. Now, this, I think, caught the army, Indian army, completely by surprise, because this is an area which China has not claimed in the past. The very valley is named after a gentleman called Galwan, who was very much Indian, who always lived in India. This area has never really been contested. At best, it is a buffer territory. But the idea that it might belong to China because of some kind of tribute claim is, frankly, quite tenuous. Now,
understood.
The point here is that if you allow them to take this, then where does it stop? Because once you allow them to take this, you are affirming a certain principle. Nepal at one point of time was in an agreement with the Qing state as well. So tomorrow China can say 200 years ago you were a protectorate of China, so today you belong to us as well. I mean, history is like that, right? The whole idea of settled borders is that at some point of time you stop expanding. So yes, China would like to add more of Ladakh to their area because they see Ladakh the same way they see Tibet. Tibet is their buffer against South Asia, against India. If you can expand the buffer, why wouldn't you want it?
Understood. So the Chinese argument is basically that if a particular region in the world at any point in time paid tribute to the Qing dynasty or a central Chinese power, they automatically have maybe some kind of territorial claim. And this territorial claim becomes stronger based on the duration of the sovereignty and also the recency of the sovereignty. So, for example, in Tibet, there was a clear line right until the 18 or 1900s that Tibet was paying tribute to Beijing. And that's why the territorial claim was easy to justify. In Ladakh, it's a little more tenuous because they did go under the Sikh Empire for a considerable amount of time. And that sovereignty link was broken with Tibet. So now it becomes a question of, you know, how strong is the opponent for China to really impose its territorial claim, right?
That's true. So it's a case of creep, how much you allow your claims to creep. Now, the thing is the tributary system of China, as this is a term, of course, which has been used by Western scholars. I should add that this is not a term China has used itself. But the tributary system was that in order to maintain peace in our region, primarily East Asia, you have to pay us a kind of tribute, you have to accept our overall sovereignty, our overall superiority, and in return, we will let you live.
Mm-hmm.
But this claim was always a very legal one in the most literal sense of the word. It's not as though these regions ever really accepted Chinese legal superiority, and no doubt some sort of military reprisal would have taken place had China attempted to invade. This is more about just keeping your big neighbor happy. So this is the mentality that China has carried forward into the 21st century, that if we can take more territory, we will. The idea of tributary, of course, is just, I mean, it's just a way to buttress your excuse.
Right, I understand. It sort of provides some pseudo-legal framework for their claim.
That's a very good phrase, a pseudo-legal framework. Yes, it does.
A pseudo-legal is what I said, but yes. So this is the historical backdrop, right? This is basically how China sees all these peripheral regions and how it, you know, sort of assesses its claim, territorial claims over these regions. And we talked about the Qing dynasty and whether those claims have any valid legal standing in the contemporary world. That's it for this episode of the Armchair Strategist podcast. In the next episode, we will speak about a watershed movement in Indian history, the 1962 war with China. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share.